the damage that sin can do in our lives, and how to overcome temptation. Next on The Balanced Word.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Temptation to sin is all around us, and no doubt there's something in your life that is attempting to pull you away from the Lord. After we identify what it is, we need to recognize it's ultimately killing us. Today on The Balanced Word, we'll take a look at Solomon's big weakness and just how devastating sin is. Temptation and caving into it will only hurt and destroy us. So how does it happen? Pastor Dave Rolfe will address that as well as he continues through the Bible in stories. He joins us today in the Proverbs.
Proverbs chapter 7, what we're doing all this year is going through the whole Old Testament and reading some of the stories that are in the Old Testament. The Bible's full of great stories, and so we're going through and hitting some of them. The one in chapter 7, Solomon's talking, and really he spends chapters 5, 6, and 7, and we'll look through all of these, about specifically, he's talking about a seduction that happened. So it's kind of racy, spicy, feels like a movie, interesting story. Let's just get right into it there, Proverbs chapter 7. And he introduces it by saying, you know, trying to get you to stay away from immoral women, seductresses who flatter with their words. And in verse 6, he says, here's the story. For at the window of my house, I looked through my lattice. Why? He doesn't say. But I saw among the simple, the stupid, I perceived among the youth, same thing, a young man devoid of understanding. And he's passing along the street near her corner. And he took the path to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. Don't you love this, the way he tells the story? There a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent or shameless face, she said to him, I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. In other words, hey, I just got back from church. Praise the Lord. So she says, I came out to meet you diligently to seek your face, and I found you. You're just what I'm looking for. I have spread my bed with tapestry, colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let's take our fill of love until morning. Let's delight ourselves with love, because my husband isn't home. And he's gone on a long journey, took a bunch of money with him, and he's coming home on a specific day, not today, not even tomorrow. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately, he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, until an arrow struck his liver. As a bird hastens to the snare, he didn't even know it would cost his life. Now, therefore, listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths, for she has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death. Man, haven't you heard that story before? Like every movie you've ever seen and every TV show that's ever been on, this evil seductress woman. Now, you might go, wait, I know some men that are like this, definitely. Well, Solomon was a guy whose bias was against women, really. And you can kind of understand it. But at some point, I mean, there were evil women who took him in and manipulated him. But once a guy gets to 700 wives and 300 concubines, you might start going, Solomon, I wonder if you're kind of sleazy too, you know? It's not just all these women. But he's talking about what destroyed him. This was his big weakness, was being drawn into bad relationships with women. So, but also in this, and really chapters 5, 6, and 7 develop this whole theme. And it's certainly relevant to people who are being seduced in a relational way to something that's a relationship that'll destroy them. But it also is kind of his personification of temptation, period. And we will look at that too. But first, let's just kind of look through as he develops this whole thing, and then we'll draw some conclusions from it. Look back in Proverbs chapter 5. A similar setup to the story in chapter 7 that we just looked at. But he says in chapter 5, "My son, pay attention to my wisdom, lend your ear to my understanding, so you can preserve discretion and keep your lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey. They can really sound sweet. And her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, bitter as wormwood." Amazing how that changes. "Sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of hell. Lest you ponder her path of life. Her ways are unstable. You don't even know them. Therefore, hear me, my children. Don't depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one." Goes on and talks about your flesh and your body being consumed. And he says, man, I hated instruction, and that's why I got ruined. And in verse 15, he says, "Drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be only your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth as a loving deer and a graceful doe," which I have no idea what that has to do with letting her breasts satisfy you at all times, "and always be enraptured with her love." But he's like, man, why do you want to do this? In verse 23, you'll die for lack of instruction. And then in chapter 6, after talking about stupid things and the things that God hates, he then returns to this theme. It's very, he's developing it for three chapters. And he says in verse 20, "My son, keep your father's command. Don't forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart. Tie them around your neck. You know, keep them with you." In verse 23, "The commandment is a lamp and the law a light. Reproof of instruction are the way of life to keep you from the evil woman, from the flattering tongue of a seductress. Do not lust after her beauty in your heart." That's where it starts. "Nor let her allure you with her eyelids." Oh, those eyelids. For by means of a harlot, a man is reduced to a crust of bread. He's toast. "And an adulteress will prey upon his precious life. Can a man take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be seared? So is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her shall not be innocent." And goes on and says, her husband's going to, you can't calm him down. This is going to devastate you. And then it all leads to his story in chapter 7. So you look at it, and let's face it. We all know people. We've all seen it. Some of us have endured it. The devastation that happens when people decide that they, you know, are going to wander away from a marriage commitment that they've made. And probably no one knows more what that feels like than people who have been through it on both sides. It really does cost you. It really does do damage. It really is painful in a way that sometimes never completely clears up. And so when we look at this and we can just go, yep, it really is devastating. But there are some things that he points out here about that that can help us to realize how this happens. How does this kind of damage happen? And one of the first things we realize is temptation can be really slick and smooth. Sometimes we think, wow, this is just so easy that this, you know, like Debbie Boone used to sing, it can't be wrong if it feels so right. Now, you got to understand, sometimes smoothness even though it's unstable, but there's something right about it, sometimes that's the setup. That's how it begins. But then as it develops, we begin to discover that, you know, actually, and sometimes there are plenty of times when two people just kind of fall into a sin and nobody was really planning it. But usually there's at least one party, if not both, that's kind of scheming, that's sort of thinking, that's making plans. And seduction happens very intentionally to understand that there are people out there who have in every intention of corrupting you, of drawing you away from commitments that you've made. They really want to do that. And you know, it isn't necessarily another person who wants to be with you. It's anyone who wants to pull you off your commitment and away from your life. And so part of our awareness has to be, yeah, there are people who are actually trying to do this. And the thing is, just like in our story here in chapter 7, sometimes they act really spiritual, pseudo-spiritual. A seductor or a seductress, and by the way, there are as many men at least as women who are doing this. It's just back in Solomon's day, the men weren't hitting on you. But it's like they can sometimes talk a great spiritual game. Some people who have done the most devastating destruction in people's lives are people who talk all about praise the Lord, just like the woman here. Hey, I'm on my way home from church, just made a vow, and I've been looking for you. And so we need to understand that just because somebody talks a spiritual game does not mean that they aren't at the same time wanting to destroy us, wanting to set us up, to use us in some way, take advantage of us. And so we see that here as well. Now, in the story, it's really clear that, you know, the attempt is like, wow, this is going to be freeing. It's the idea of, I want to be free, and so I'm going to do something, and it's going to set me free. But giving into temptation never sets you free. It always entraps you. You think, wow, this is going to be so great. Well, not so much. Down the road, it really isn't at all. But I think every one of us can say, just like what he says here, man, this will pierce your liver. This will destroy your life. This will turn your life into a living hell. And everybody who suckers for some shortcut in this way is going to find out, yeah, it just hurts. It really, really is painful. It damages you. It costs you so much. It's devastating. Yesterday, after the baptism, I had a funeral for a guy who's just one of the most important men in my life over the years, the one guy who really encouraged me in my walk with the Lord. But the funeral was at a church that I grew up in when I was a little kid. And, you know, growing up in that church, it was like my life. But that church, you know, sadly, I found out later, it was really funny because men in the church were coming and telling me, they were very legalistic, and they were coming and telling me that because I had long hair, that I was out of God's will. Really ironic today, like that somebody really thought that was going to be an issue for very long. But then I found out, like, these guys that were blasting me for having long hair, the whole church was like Peyton Place. And you have to be old to even know what that means, but or for those of you who are younger that don't remember Peyton Place, it was like TV. And so, but it was like all the leaders of the church are having affairs with each other. And it was like, pastor, what, you know, it was a moral mess. And yet they were so judgmental about like me listening to rock and roll or something like that. And when I went back in that church, it was like, I have a lot of great memories, but man, the truth is, it felt kind of sick to be there. Maybe you have places where it's like, man, this just brings back memories of a bad time, of horrible things that I've experienced, because moral compromise just does that. It soils everything that it touches, and it takes a long time for it to heal and to be, and there are people you hope you don't see them, you hope you don't run into them. It's so awkward and everything. And, you know, so when we look at this on the surface, we can go, wow, yeah, that's definitely I know what that means. Every one of us, our lives have been touched in some way by something like this. But guess what? That's not just what it's all about. See, because Solomon's going with his big weakness. And so I'm sure there are some people in here today who are like, oh, this is really awkward and uncomfortable for me. Because what do you know? Did somebody tell you? Did my wife tell you or whatever? And it's like, look, I'm more concerned with those of you who are sitting here feeling really good about yourself because you've never done this. Because it's like, nope, I don't do that. You know, you're a righteous woman who's like, I would never seduce a man. And you're a guy who's going, I've been faithful to my... Well, I mean, first of all, how about your heart? Have you started there? Jesus said, if you've lusted after someone in your heart, you're committing adultery. And if you can honestly say, no, I've never... I mean, you can pretend, guys, and tell your wife that, no, I'm never attracted to other women. If that's really true, though, you might want to see a doctor. But... But I want to take this a step further. Right after this in chapter 8, Solomon makes wisdom a person. He personifies wisdom, and he says, wisdom is crying out as well. A better life is inviting you. And so this is really an example, a picture of what all temptation does to us. Everything that draws us away from what God has for us and pulls us into something that's going to hurt and destroy us and others in our lives. And those are a lot of different things. Now, there is no doubt about it, you know, compromising morally, getting involved in illicit relationships, and yeah, that's definitely destructive. And I don't even think we have to labor on that. I think sometimes preachers just want to preach on that all the time because it makes us feel like really righteous, like, oh, I haven't done that, so ooh. But what does pull you? What's your temptation? What is it that seduces you? And that's a real question because for some of us, we may go, I resist that moral temptation. It is kind of nice that as you get older, there are just less opportunities, let's face it. And even if you have opportunities, you're just kind of tired. You know, but at the end of the day, it's like, wow, that just sounds too complicated. But what has seduced you? How about your career? How about success? Is that what lured you? Is that what calls you? Is that what pulls you away from things that matter more? Those long hours, so like when you're old and too tired to do anything, that then you can not have to work? Does that make sense? For some people, it might just be their friends. For some people, it could be a good activity like golf or something like that. For some people, the cry of seduction is one of shopping, of having more clothes, different clothes. For some, it might be, I want to own a house, and then I want to own a bigger house, and a bigger house, and this year-old car is just, it's a year old. I want a newer one. And then it's like, I know this Toyota is perfectly fine, but to get the same car with Lexus emblems would be even better because it says, look at me, I'm successful. And then you go, Lexus is still kind of wannabe, Mercedes, and then that's, let's face it, everybody wants a Ferrari. And so it's that climb, it's that desire to go, I want to do something that impresses people about me. I want to do something that somehow there's something in my life that isn't satisfied, and if I only had that, if I could only do that, if I could only make people believe that, this would do it. And it's that seduction that, by the way, is incredibly intentional. Do you understand that there are people who are spending billions of dollars to make you think you need a new car every year? Because they come up with a little different version of it. And like, oh, yeah, it's like my wife has a Mini Cooper. And I remember when the year after we bought it, they came out with the four-door. And it's like, And I'm going, wait, why did you want a Mini Cooper if you think you needed five doors on it? I mean, I can reach in one door and reach the entire car. But there are people that spend a lot of money to make back doors on a Mini Cooper look desirable. There are people who, and I'm sorry if you sell cars, good for you, don't worry. There are enough people who aren't here today that you'll still sell plenty of cars. But that's what they're trying to do. The stores design their layout, even the grocery stores do, to make you go to the places where you're going to buy things that you don't need, but they make the most money from. And for some of us, it's, you know, even like for me, I'll tell you something, man, food has always been, you know, bad food has always been incredibly seductive to me. And I've lived most of my life with the attitude that if it's healthy, I don't want it. If I want it, it's probably not good for me. But what that has done for me and taking a stressful life, working too hard in ministry, and then trying to satiate myself by eating comfort food made me battle. I don't care about my weight. I mean, I kind of like looking hideous because then I don't have to deal with these seductress women. But the thing is, it's like I ate stuff that has caused me, even though I knew there was diabetes in my family, that now I have to think about my blood sugar all the time. And yet that does not make me not want those things. Yesterday after the funeral, we were having some people over for dinner and we're making pizzas and the barbecue. And Ann and I had a discussion. Do we have pepperoni? And she goes, no, I don't think we do, but I have all these other. And I'm like, no, it's not a pizza without pepperoni. So she goes, well, get some on your way home. So I go in the store and I get this thing of pepperoni and I'm in line. And after I caught up on the gossip on the magazines, I look over on the other side and there's all these candy bars. And I'm just going, those look so good. And Ann's not here. I can throw the receipt away. She'll never know. And I'm going, wait, do I not eat candy because I want to impress my wife? If I eat a candy bar, that might rob me of a week of life with my kids, my wife, my granddaughter. And I'm like, do I want to maybe miss Sadie's wedding because of a rocky road? And I'm just like, but it's going, oh, please, they put it right there. It's like, if there was a candy aisle, I'm not going to the candy aisle, but you have to check out. And there it is. And, you know, for so much of my life, it's when I get into stress, the answer for me is just calling me cake, pie, candy, chocolate. I thank God for a sugar-free chocolate because, you know, it'll sort of satisfy you. And then a few minutes later, it lets you realize you ate too much of it. You'll figure it out. So there's nothing like watching recycled mistakes and going, yeah, boy, that is kind of weird. But everybody has something that they're drawn to.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com. Or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. With these final reflections about temptation, here again is Pastor Dave.
You might say, I don't care about work. I don't care about success. I don't care about money. I don't care about houses. What do you care about? Because I guarantee you, there are things in your life that are calling to you. And some of them might even sound really spiritual. God's called us together. God provided this job where they're killing me, but someday I'll be really important. Yeah, and then what? And then what's it going to do for you? And so we have to understand. And Solomon, who had it all, he had success. He had wealth. Later on, we find out, he goes, none of it mattered in the end. I traded away what was important for what wasn't. And so it's going to be smooth. It's going to be intentionally seductive. It may even sound like something that's spiritual.
Discovering balanced living through the Word of God, this has been The Balanced Word with Dave Roth. We'll have another great Bible story for you next time. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. Online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my soul.